Nice to see you again. I'll just read a very brief introduction that I've written here for this section. Matthew's community is suffering persecution from outside the community. We've already listened to Jesus encouraging his disciples to persevere through such trials. Some of the suffering is also coming from divisions within the community. In the previous section, which we've just completed, we saw Jesus gathering this community around him. On this rock I will build my ecclesia, my church. Gathering this community around him and training them to believe and understand. They are with him, united to Jesus as sons of the Father. Now Matthew focuses on central aspects of discipleship and shows how essential it is to have the proper spirit if we are to retain the unity of the community and resolve the differences that arise within it. You remember, of course, Jesus' beautiful words at the Last Supper, "Father, may they be one, as you and I are one." Well, we obviously know that, sadly, not all Christians are in communion. So there have been historical hurts over the centuries, particularly in the 11th century with the eastern and the western parts of the ancient Roman Empire splitting down the middle, and that break is now being beautifully healed, but the healing takes time. So you've still got a division. And then in the 16th century in the Western Church, again, the Reformation, Counter-Reformation, and the struggles, national and political and so on, and partly religious, but I think mainly national. But, so you've got these sad hurts. And Matthew's community has already got division within it. And so now we're going to go into a very beautiful section. We'll finish it tonight, really. This is a very brief section of how do we resolve differences? What qualities must we have? Because they had an enormous task to do. They had to try and unite Jewish, traditional Christians who become Christians, but were very beautifully steeped in rich Jewish tradition. Then you had Gentile people joining the community with none of that tradition and not expected to be part of it. But that's always hard, isn't it? When you're trying to reach out in love and there's a lot of it that you don't share. So what do you need to stay one or to rebuild unity? Note in this section tonight the constant use of the word Father. The church is in a special way God's house. Jesus teaches his disciples how to live as members of God's household. For the church is a community of Jesus' brothers and sisters. Everything in Jesus' covenant community is based on the intimacy which God offers Jesus' disciples in their relationship to him. An intimacy shared with Jesus who is among them. So that's an introductory comment. Let's see if that's valid. And the first quality we'll all have to have if we're going to be the brothers and sisters of Jesus and to welcome each other and to somehow bridge differences is a stunning one, and here it is. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, "Who's the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" Jesus called a child. He put among them, a phrase that recurs in Matthew's gospel, "I will be among you." Jesus is the one among us. This is a symbol of Jesus. Puts the child among them. Jesus called God Abba. He saw himself as a child. And he said to them, "Truly I tell you, unless you change," it's not going to be easy for adults to do this, "unless you change and become like children, you'll never enter the kingdom of heaven." Whoever becomes humble, not sure that's the best translation, but it's a good one. The literal of the Greek is simply lowly. Humble has an extra connotation, but it'll do. That's the meaning, but it's the word used for being low rather than high. Unless you become lowly, like this child, or whoever does that, is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me. The word there that's translated humble or lowly has already occurred beautifully in a text that I've mentioned already tonight. Jesus said, "Come to me, all you who labor, and I will learn from me, because I am lowly, humble, meek and humble of heart, and you'll find rest for your souls." So it's obviously here, this is about welcoming. It's about being like a child, and a child can actually bring people together. I mean, one of the terrible tragedies, isn't it, when you see these, well, films or real life, when you see two adults hurting each other, and I'm sure you've seen this, you've probably been involved in it, and then you look at in the eyes of a little child that's in the middle, and the little child just cannot understand. It's totally bewildered at this, what's going on, and it's hurting because it just can't comprehend it. None of us can comprehend it, but the adults are battling and the little child is just existentially rent. Well, if we're like little children, perhaps we can wake up adults to realize what they're doing, all this power play and traditions and minor matters that keep us apart. We might be able to, like little kids can play together, whatever their color, whatever their background, they can love each other, they can be mates, friends, come to the party. What happens to us stupid adults that we forget that? Why do we become so important? So that's something of that's in that passage. But there's also the lovely sense of welcome. Welcoming one such child in my name welcomes me. So I'll ask for a little few minutes. We could spend all night on, we won't. What is humility? Wouldn't you like an answer to that? Well, you've come to the right person, because I'm very proud of my knowledge of humility. Now, I'll say a few things about it that I've read in books. It's a quick summary of what I think humility is, and if I'm wrong, will you tell me later? And I'll improve it for the next time. Something like this, because it's such a delicate quality. If we're humble, I think these are the things we do. We recognize that all we are and all we have is a gift. That's the first thing. No point of pride or jealousy or thinking I'm better than anybody else. What the heck's all that about? It's all a gift. It is all a gift. Anything you are has come from your mum and your dad and your grandpa and your teachers and everyone around. You've said yes to it, okay, true, to some extent, but we are just a gift. Life came from love, and everything we are is a gift, so wouldn't it be wonderful to actually know that? Then you'd never brag about anything. You'd just express gratitude like Mary. All generations, she said, "Oh, call me blessed, isn't this wonderful, isn't God good to me?" So that's the first thing. Secondly, we're dependent upon God for everything. Like a child. And do you believe that? Do I believe that? Yes, I believe it here, but do I actually have to watch my life to see? And I tend, as a male Australian, dare I say cleric, inverted commas, trained to be independent, the danger might be that I might think I'm doing it, or I can, okay, I can manage. I can manage without you, I can manage without God, maybe, yeah? It doesn't last long, I admit, but we could tend that way. So humility is to know that I'm absolutely dependent on the love of God for everything that I am and have right now. So gratitude is the feeling, not pride. If we're humble, we know that of ourselves we can do nothing. My eldest brother, and he is a saint, might I say, a stunning man, just got news a few days, just had a slight stroke. His wife's wonderful too, so she... And he's on the phone again tonight, he's okay again. But he's been through Parkinson's disease and whatever else. But he's so lovely. He's gentle. If you want to know how to handle a woman, write to my brother. He is, honestly, he's, you know that how to handle a woman? Love her. That's absolutely what he does. He just loves his wife. So she gets away with murder. No, she doesn't. She's really wonderful with him. They're really wonderful with each other, but he's just gentle and loving. It's just, you just got to see it. It's really wonderful. His children can pick it up too. But here he is, has a stroke, but... Now, just imagine having, well, some of you may have had one, but have a stroke, like, it doesn't take long to realise, what the heck are we capable of? We're very fragile, aren't we? So why get proud? Why get too important about life, for God's sake? Why not only spend what time we have loving? Wouldn't that be nice? So that's what this is about. Be like a child and have your arms open. Did I tell you the story about the little Italian kid that I fell in love with, I must confess? 9-year-old, it's a lovely story for me. Oh, should I be telling you now? Anyway, I am, I'm starting. I was in Perugia. I'd spent a year at the Biblicum in Rome learning scripture, and all the lectures were in Italian, and I'd never learnt Italian, brains, but I knew Latin and French, so I could guess my way through it, but it's hard work guessing your way through a language. At the end of the year, I thought, maybe I should go and learn Italian. Wasn't I smart? Some are pretty slow. So I went to learn Italian, and I did what I always did. I forgot to take any money with me. Much. I took a little bit, but I don't have much, and I didn't take much. And the place I was staying in was a wonderfully romantic Franciscan monastery. If you ever, just outside the city of Perugia, looking out over the valley. Honestly, it was absolutely stunning. But it wasn't bed and breakfast. It was bed. Bed. Beautiful view. Major problems. So I had to find a place to eat, and I worked out how much money I had, how long I was going to be there, and there was no way I was going to be able to eat. So anyway, I had to look for the cheapest little pizzeria I could find, and I went all around, and of course I found a cheap one, and it was cheap because no one went there, and people had just, and it was in a back street, and there's this young mum and young dad, not that, oh, they were young from my point of view anyhow, they might have been 40. So, and they had a girl of whatever age, and, but the boy's the interesting point. He's about 9, just about to make his first communion, and he was an absolute stunner. And he became my teacher, because I'd go, no one else was in there, I'd go in there to get my $8, which would last me for the day, the equivalent, 8,000 lira, I'd get a bit of pasta that you can... So, and he would teach me. And this little kid used to think I was the biggest drongo he'd ever met, because I didn't know the word for pillow, window... roof, and he used to love teaching me. He was, you know, see him growing by the minute. One day he wasn't there, this little kid. I'm so pleased he wasn't there. And I, of course, was very unhappy that he wasn't there, my little professore. And he came in about 10 minutes late, and you should have seen, he ran into the room, because he was late, and he did this gesture, I hope you know Italian. He said, "Eccomi!" And he's, because it was true, his mum and dad were behind the counter, and I was sitting there, and we all lit up. This little boy of 9, who knew his own soul, said, "Here I am, like, I'm the best thing God ever put breath in. Everybody should be happy now because I'm here." And I thought, wouldn't it be beautiful if we could all keep that quality, or first of all have it, and then keep it all our life. This little, I've never lost the image of this, and I can't find the kid, by the way. When I went back to say thank you a year later, they closed down the place and they're gone. And I really miss him, and I'd love one day for someone to knock on my door, because he knows I'm from Australia. He thinks it's about that big. And this kid will come in, and I'll recognise him. Gianfranco. Why did I tell you all that? Yes. Because that's all about humility. Humility is a beautiful... This boy had been so loved by his mum and dad, and by my say, and obviously he was getting loved by me too, because I'm a stranger who thinks he's the best thing that God ever put breath into, and he was, or he is. So he comes in and he's just joyful about being. But he's not proud. He's not putting himself up. He's just simply there. And that's the last point of humility. This is, for me, the hard part. I don't know how you find this. If we're humble, the above realizations bring joy. That's the point. So you can know that everything you have is a gift and feel miserable about it or something. Or you can think you're dependent on God and you don't like being dependent on God. You'd like to be independent, I don't know. Or you think of yourself, you can do nothing and you can implode into a despair or something. All the saints are wonderful people. All these facts make them really joyful. Why? Because they know they're not on their own. They know that God is the lover, that God is with them, and that all they need is constantly being given them by grace. I think if we could come to that point where we rejoice in the total dependence on God and in our beauty, with all its limits, because limits are what make people what we are, our limits define us. Whoever we are, God has created us beautifully with wonderful gifts to be, to give, to receive. They mightn't compare to others, so what? We might be envious of others, what's the point? We might think we're better than others, that's foolish. Just be, but be open like a flower and grateful for the gift of life. I think that's what humility is. Of texts, Yahweh redeems, we're told, and they are those who are low, base, wretched, insignificant. God has a very special place for the broken, just like you mums and dads have, or you nurses have for the sick, or we have for the people, like nearly all of us, who are broken and aware of it. Our heart goes out to such people, of course. So does the heart of God. Isaiah 49:13, sing for joy, O heavens, exult, O earth. Break forth, mountains, into singing, for the Lord has comforted his people and will have pity on his anawim, on his humble, poor, afflicted, oppressed, broken, psychologically fragile people. In Sirach, Ecclesiasticus 2:17, they who fear the Lord keep their hearts prepared, and they bow down their souls in his presence. Like a child looking up to the adult and knowing that you'll be picked up and held. Matthew, if you raise yourself up, you'll be bowed down. If you bow yourself down, if you accept to be small, you'll be lifted up. Now, perhaps the most beautiful expression of this in the Old Testament, Psalm 131, the perfect example of the humble. Lord, I am not proud, holding my head too high, reaching beyond my grasp. And sometimes we can be pushed beyond our grasp by society, by a wife, by a husband, by kids' expectations. No, let's just... If people love you, they've got to take you as you are. They've got to take me as I am. With all our limitations and all our beauty. And we shouldn't allow ourselves to be pushed. We're not reaching beyond our grasp. No, I'm calm and tranquil. The Greek Septuagint uses the word humble here. I'm calm and humble. Like a weaned child resting in its mother's arms, my whole being at rest. Let Israel rest in the Lord now and forever. So, however we think about it, and of course I've done that far too quickly, the first quality Jesus says for all of us, if we're going to be disciples of Jesus, is to be humble. So, if we're not humble, the community can't hold together. if we're humble, a humble person never chases anybody away and is always ready to welcome.